Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon, and welcome to, as usual, this time of the day when it starts, when it's starting with the sarcasm, it's obviously Home Run, your drive time show that's running from 4:30 to 6, as usual. If you are, you know, thank you for tuning in, whoever you're tuned in from, locally or international. Speaking of locally and international, that is, you're going to be hearing a lot of that today, the local and international, because we are talking, we're going to talk about the NIPDBC investment reports. This is a, you know, it's a four parts report, right? That basically looks at Namibia's investment investment landscape, where if you, you know, if you are a foreign or local investor, you want to put your hands on these reports, and most importantly, you want to tune in, especially if you're a local investor, because yeah,
there's a new word in the vocabulary,
which is,
it's a guide.
Oh, there's a new one.
Yeah,
here's me talking to myself. There's a new word in the vocabulary for us right now, which is, it's a guide.
Investment guide.
it's the guide.
Actually, I really love reports. I'm beginning to realize that.
Yeah. So
it's an investment guide.
So yesterday we had to deal with a policy document.
And I kept saying report.
Yeah.
And now we're dealing with a guide. They are guiding you. You know what? You want to invest in Namibia? Come here. Come here. You're welcome.
Just come and look at these things.
Yeah. These are the major cities we have. And
major attractions over here.
Yeah. This is our infrastructure. And now if you want to understand how our policies work, we have something called consultative policy.
Yes, guys, it's end of the month. You could obviously see the particular spring in our step. And it's also Easter weekend, you know, mind you.
Oh, yeah.
It's Easter weekend. Not that we actually get Easter weekend. You know, you guys can still tune in on Friday, Sunday, Saturday, Monday. We'll still deliver. However, you were still saying, Helmut, specifically on the
the
conduciveness.
The conduciveness of Namibia's investment landscape. We have, you know, there's a lot that Namibia can offer. All you just have to do is come here and invest. If you are ready here, all you have to do is just go straight, go straight up and invest.
Just straight up.
As if it's that easy.
Just straight up.
Because it's
say
not.
That again, Emma. Just.
You can just go straight up and invest. I think when it comes to the investment landscape, as in every business that you have to, you know, that's engaged in, or more like that's that involves both, people coming out of the country and people coming in, you know, coming from inside the country that's participating in this business, it quickly, begins to become the foreign investor guys begin to gain an upper hand, because first of all, most of those guys come super loaded, and not just that, but they also come in, you know, super loaded in foreign currency. One thing that I quickly found out, from the report that that sent me down a rabbit hole, was that Namibia is ranked the first in Africa. Now, this according to the 2025 Greenfield FDI Performance Index, Namibia is ranked first in Africa. Is ranked first in Greenfield FDI, this Greenfield Foreign Direct Investment, first in Africa and second globally. That means we are an investment hotspot for the foreign investor guys. And then I was like, what's this greenfield investment? Is it like a green hydrogen or something? Turns out, no, it has nothing to do with climate. Greenfield investment or greenfield projects are based on when it turns out when a foreign company, a foreign entity comes into your country and they build, take for example, they start their operations from scratch by building the needed infrastructure for them to operate. That's the greenfield projects. And the brown ones are where, acquisition. where a foreign company comes in.
What are you doing, Amut? Okay, okay.
Look, that's the first thing that came in my head when I was just, looking at the comparison. It's like, the greenfield investment or greenfield projects is talking about an entity that comes from mostly, this greenfield FDI, the F is for foreign, obviously, it's coming from outside Namibia. So this is an entity or an individual that comes from, from outside Namibia and set up their businesses basically in Namibia by, starting from the ground up. They are not, they are not acquiring an already existing institution that does that business because, well, they can. And there's nothing wrong with acquisitions. As long as you don't do it, contrary to the, competition laws of that country, there's nothing wrong with that. So you have the green investments, the greenfield FDI and the brownfield FDI. Now, Namibia, in the green ones, and these ones are the, in the green ones where you are seeing entities that basically coming into the country and building something from scratch instead. Of course, there are acquisitions from the look of things that are taking place, hence my previous, my cough previously. The difference between those two points to, point out to me why this speaks more to foreign investors than it does to local investors.
First and foremost, Amut, I'm on the investment guide. I think this is number 3. Just want to get the title properly. It's the one about establishing a business, the starting and operating a business. Yeah, volume 3.
We are back again to the ease of doing business.
This is it, and it actually factors into the conversation we also had, I think it was not yesterday, back in last week, the one based upon when you look at holistically what Namibia has on offer, what is potentially there. Mm-hmm. The particular conversation we've had so far, or conversations, the budget analysis of last week. Mm-hmm. That Robin Sherborne highlighted, for the 2026-2027 budget that the Ministry of Finance obviously presented last month. In it, you now have to look parallel to that, Helmut, because remember, the most important thing for the private sector is the development budget, mm-hmm. not the operational budget. Okay, yes, true, also the operational budget side of things. But the development budget is the one that has to play a part in local content policy development, meaning small businesses or businesses being able to supply goods and services to the government and its related offices, ministries, and agencies. Yeah. And the operational budget, you could basically only factor in their water, electricity, telephone costs, cell phone costs, S&T affiliated costs. Printing paper, toilet paper, office pens, all those basic stuff that form part of an operational setup. But the important thing that stimulates economic activity to a great part is the development budget. So the development budget looks at building low-cost housing under Ministry of Urban and Rural Development's, what's that housing thing's name again, Helmut? The mass housing project, yes. Looking also at, for example, let's say the other related associated economic developments, which are also supposed to be sort of like administered and supervised by related state-owned entities and enterprises. So the development budget sort of like is the window towards seeing what the Namibian government will spend in the Namibian economy to stimulate activity. Now, these guides are there to tell an investor They obviously have to partner that up with any inflationary information that the Bank of Namibia releases from a previous year, and also their forecasting into the new year, and that any particular business planner then has to couple that knowledge with the development budget announcement from February back in last month. And then they obviously have to go and look at the global geopolitical picture across the world in terms of whether or not there will actually be a boots on the ground physical land invasion by the United States on Iran, because then obviously you will know to which direction will the actual heat of this conflict go to. Now, obviously the current climate sees an interesting development, specifically like in the tourism sector, Helmut. The tourism sector, and I would love it if the tourism operators, or not the tourism operators, but the tourism associations and entities, you know, regularly bring out tourism numbers. Instead of us having to wait every 2 years, 1 year, we'd like to see, you know, like the hospitality figures that we last did back in last year, which highlighted the accommodation trends and the likes. Now, the obvious discussion that you can look at from here when you're looking at ease of doing business scenario and the investment guide and the other related information that I mentioned at the start of everything is, how big is your administrative hurdle going to be before you start making money, which is the ease of business, doing business in its entirety? How big of a hustle is this going to be? Just registering, just establishing, just getting a tax number, registering your employees if you're going to have any, because you can actually run a business as a one-man, one-woman show, and it can actually make millions of Namibian dollars or US dollars or British pounds or euros, whatever you wish to call it. One of the best scenarios that I've always seen has been a listing. It's a rental listing, Helmut, here in the center of town in Auschwitzplatz, of the capital, where a guy is literally renting out. It's a guy, because the person posting this is actually a man. This guy is renting out a fully furnished flat, 2-bedroom flat, ne, for $1,000 a day. Let me say it again. He's renting it. But having such a price tag on a fully furnished flat, 2-bedroom flat, ne, and this is a business that you can look at this as a business, because primarily it's a one-man show that you can assume. When you look at this particular business, this is a service business. So what is the service providing? This is for a tourist who doesn't want to stay in a hotel that probably might ask them, €100 a day? Which is about 2,000 Namibian dollars. Mm. But if you ask €50 a day, which is 1,000 Namibian dollars a day, you can understand the logic, because you're looking at what client, what targeted customer base is this aimed for. So, and this is on Airbnb. This is someone posting it on Airbnb, which is obviously similar to like the Yango discussion or Uber and the likes, you know, going through the gig economy in order to establish a business enterprise. And you don't actually need to register any business and the likes of that. So, which actually sort of like circumvents even these investment guides, because you can just be someone just needing to, you just need a cozy bed or like 5 days in Windhoek. That's all you need. And that's the going rate. $1,000 a day. Now, mind you, Helmut, if it's a month like March that has 31 days in it, this person can easily make, the owner of this property can easily make $31,000 a month. How much, to a European, 50 euros a day is nothing. To a Namibian, 50 euros.
Yeah.
It's $1,000. 50 euros.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money for a Namibian. But to a European tourist, or to an American tourist, even to someone from Asia, I mean, they would come here with USD or either with euros. 50 euros a day is, I don't want to say friendly. I also don't want to say amicable. I just want to say it seems like a fair offer, you know, for a fully furnished flat, 2-bedroom flat, fully furnished. And that obviously shows you there's ways of doing business that you can participate in. Now, obviously, location is everything when it comes to, which is the principle of business always. Where are you based? And how accessible is your entity for your customers?
Like if you want to venture in that business.
Yeah. Where are you based? And obviously how accessible is it? That's one of the basic things. That's why.
How often do tourists come to that area?
Not really. If you look at it, it's only one person that can rent that flat or that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a one person. That's a niche market business.
Yeah.
Meaning it sources for a tourist who doesn't want to stay in the hotel, on the Independence Avenue, who doesn't want to stay at the country club all the way on the outskirts between Southern Industrial Windhoek or Academia of Windhoek and Prosperita, but who actually wants to go to be central, have a walking distance to many particular facilities, and who can easily and accessibly access public transport, meaning cabs or even the Yangos. Now, you would always see with the retail businesses, you can mention them, the ShopRite, the Checkers, the Voermans, they are close to major highway networks or major roadway networks, meaning the customer must just turn off from the road, park, walk in. Or the customer comes to a centralized shopping, concentrated shopping experience, which is a mall. There's like protective measures like looking after the car under, roofed parking and all that, indoor parking and all that. And the customer knows, okay, I'm getting add-ons to the experience of coming to the shopping mall. But the aim is for the customer just to go to a specific retail experience. Now, when we look at this particular scenario, what I've highlighted to you are two variations of doing business. One where you can be completely unregistered. You can literally fly under the radar. The only thing that there is paperwork about you, Helmut, is literally that you have a mortgage on this property, on this flat.
Yeah.
And that works through your bank. And your bank doesn't care because the agreement between your bank and you was, you've got to service the mortgage per month, right? So pay it per month. So if you look at this particular rate, it sounds like a wonderful idea. Anyone that has extra, you've got extra living space and stuff like that, you can go for it. There's even a gig economy thing known as couch surfing. Do you know what couch surfing is?
Yeah, I think you explained that the last time we had this, we had a hospitality discussion.
Yeah.
And now that not the couch surfing, the first one where
Airbnb function.
Yeah, you have the fully furnished flat that you're just renting out. That sounds like an excellent idea if you have extra space or available space to basically go in that direction of business. Except that I imagine one of the challenges that you will have to navigate would be the security component. You have to provide security assurances to someone that probably have never been in Namibia, let alone Windhoek, that it's safe for them to stay at a place that is secluded, so to say, from what you'd expect, established accommodation areas for travelers like your hotels and guest houses.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those hurdles you will obviously have to navigate, and you can imagine. Yeah, Flu is playing a little bit of a trick on me.
Mm.
You can imagine you can imagine that would be one of those challenges. So venturing into that into that business would be mostly recommended for those for people that have properties around CBD.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can try that if you are not nowhere near the CBD, but I can imagine how tricky it's going to be because you are coming from the airport. This traveler is coming from the airport and now they have to go through the CBD to...
All the way to Rocky Crest.
All the way to Rocky Crest. Oshemuise, but for these people.
Why did you want to drop in Oshemuise there?
That's how a lot of... guys, a lot of people know Rocky Christmas. It's social method, but for rich people. But now, Helmut always starting again.
At least, you know, at least it's what now? You know, we made it past the first 20 minutes, you know.
Man, how did we pull that off? Yeah, now, coming back to this, four parts report, obviously, you know, if you look like, the fourth one is, you know, is focusing more on, you know, the fourth one is focusing more on banking and foreign currency regulations. Obviously, you can just tell from the title that this is mostly, you know, it's going to be mostly useful to foreign investors.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you're a Namibian, why would you? You obviously know your bank. Your bank has your relationship with you. Like that Airbnb guy that explained. The relationship between those two parties is the guy just has to, he's the original client. He has to pay a mortgage bond. So he's, so you can clearly see why a fully furnished flat is on the market for $1,000 Namibian a day rental. Meaning, oh, this is, you know, if you've got a specific amount of paper in your pocket that you'd wish to relinquish, you know, there's this particular offering. Meaning, this is above the actual mortgage that said particular person has to pay back. But that's me besides the point. You're actually making a good point because an established BNB person would obviously know that, you know, they would have a business account. The bed and breakfast would be registered as a business. They would have employees, whether it be family members that might not get paid. I'm just sliding that in there because sometimes we know how family works. They just highlight, no, you eat enough. No, you get free. You get free lodging here, so why must you be paid an actual salary?
I think one of those, take for example, I imagine if a lot of people were to start doing that business, you are most likely to see some regulations being brought in because, now I'm saying that because, that's now in Comestal where is it Veseren Street meets Florence Nightingale. That junction, they say this property there of this gentleman that basically, I mean, it's a residential area. Yeah, that expanded it to, you know, to create just enough space for him to start selling, I think it's second-hand cars. Yeah, and I'm just picking up under correction here. Now, the thing is, I mean, he had this whole, obviously, fleet that he was, you know, he was just running his business. And you don't see those cars here anymore, at the area anymore. Now, when I asked around, you know, because that's, you know, that's very, you know, that's very close to my jogging route. And when I asked why, because I was curious, I was like, did this guy run out of business or something? I said, I think it was the municipality that told him he cannot operate this here because it's a residential area. He will have to take this activity to where it's suitable, to where, you know, to areas where it's suitable to be conducted. In other words, if you are going to, you know, to engage in this business, go to like northern or southern industry. Yeah. Now, the thing is, now when you're talking, now that's, you're talking about mobile things like cars. You can obviously move them from one place to another. But for a guest house, I mean, for an accommodation service provision type of area, I imagine how tricky it would be to basically regulate. That's one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, almost everyone can start it.
Yes.
Yeah. As long as you have all the space available.
And all the money available.
Yeah, all the money available because you have to look. The thing is, guest houses and hotels have health requirements. They have to legally follow.
Yeah.
Now,
and you can break them up into two, ne?
Yeah.
It's the one for food, and it's the one for the overall.
The facility,
the presentation of the facility.
Now, take for example, if you have, if you have a client that comes and uses that area, and they, you know, they end up with some allergy that it's emanating from, you know, from the health hazards that are not taken care of around. Who do they report that case to?
Yeah,
that then becomes one giant question of, how to settle those disputes. But
you know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real. Just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley, hops, and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Welcome back. And now, just a minute past the hour of 5. Now, I'm pointing that out because, you know, I think it's the first or second investment guide that points towards policies because it's one of those assurances you have to give an investor, be it local or foreign investor. What are the policies? If there are grievances that are associated to your investment, ventures in Namibia, what are the procedures that you follow to basically make sure that, things are taken care of?
Yeah,
to make sure that you are given some kind of relief on whatever your grievances are. So, if you are now, you're now dealing with a situation where, take for example, a local investor, which would be a very easy business to deal with. Now, which would be a very, easy, business to venture in for a local, for a local individual.
Yeah.
But the lack of regulations brings about a lot of security issues and health related issues and, a lot of issues basically, because at a, in a hotel, if your things go missing, their procedures, it's an establishment. Their procedures that they basically have to follow to investigate the whole thing and get the police involved and all that. And if it's just a Helm's house, that's kind of a little tricky because now we have to involve in the police and they'll be like...
And who takes the responsibility?
Yeah, exactly. Who takes responsibility? Now, who's this person? Now, it's just some new guy who came from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Are you two related? No, he's actually my guest. Come again.
And then the police have to ask... Is this a business?
No, exactly. That's the question that's going to
come. No, it's not a business. You know, I I have like a spare flat somewhere.
Yeah.
And I charge $1,000 a day. Obviously, the person would say I charge $1,000 a day because the aggrieved person in this equation is going to say, I rent from him.
Ouch.
And that's what happened, Abbott. Because, yeah. I mean, when you do situation and analysis sometimes, and when you think about a scenario.
Yeah.
Okay, what are we trying to achieve from here to here?
Yeah.
Which is obviously, I'm going to put this in a macro element, which is what Robin Sherborne highlighted in his analysis and what the Minister of Finance highlighted also regarding policy clarity from Namibia. Now, policy clarity means, okay, what do we want to achieve as Namibia through our government for... let's say the developmental needs and issues that the country has. And the investors need to understand, okay, how do they operate within this particular scenario? Now, obviously, no one wants to experience the Standing Committee on Natural Resources investigation on the Omaeke uranium discussion where a dormant water resources act was used against a company who had spent $1 billion. Let me say that again. You as an investor spending $1 billion already and suddenly...
You are told there is a piece of legislation we forgot to tell you about.
About, and we feel you are not suitably positioned to conduct your business according to this business.
Which we were supposed to tell you, but we didn't.
We didn't. But you were spending your money already for 10 years, don't worry, in the country.
And for that, sorry about your money, but can we have the permit?
Yeah, please give it back. Even though we said yes to the permit, but just give it back. Yeah, we don't care what Ministry of Environment says, our big sister ministry. We don't care about what Ministry of Mines and Energy says, our older brother ministry. We just feel that you can't go ahead with whatever it is what you want to do.
even if we can see all the jobs that might be impacted because of this decision, we just don't care. So.
Dude, you just Israeled my next point.
Which Israel, Helmut? Israel, Old Testament, New Testament from Jesus, or the Crusades in between, or modern day Israel?
Okay.
Who's got a whole war with the world?
Okay, let me put it this way. Sunscreen, Israel.
Sunscreen?
Mm-hmm.
Sunscreen is Jesus.
Mm?
It's New Testament.
The reason why I don't buy the whole idea that Jesus was white is because he was born in the Middle East.
Yeah.
It's in the Middle East.
Okay, Helmut, homeboy was...
If he was white, like one British comedian puts it, if he was white, that would have been the miracle. Okay, now look, the point is...
Why am I the only one getting that joke?
I'm sure there's a, I'm sure there are listeners or two out there that...
That are asking, is this the home run? Yes, yeah. Guys.
Look. There's a reason why a large part of the large part of the Israeli population, especially those ones that are high profile, like those ones that the government have been criticized for having Eastern European names.
Oh no, they changed their names.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
No. They actually do have Eastern European names, Amut. They changed their names to sound more Middle Eastern.
So the
Semite element. If you, the first ever, what was her name? The second prime minister of Israel, the woman leader, Golda Meir. If you read that name, in Afrikaans, it's Meir. But it has to be pronounced in a specific manner, Meir. Now, I sat there, up until 2025, for better part of 30 years of me, having functioning brain cells, I went like, isn't this Afrikaans Meyer? Why is she now suddenly Meyer?
How is it coming out of the Middle East? Now,
but yeah, even our homeboy Bibi, Netanyahu is not his real surname. No, it's a Polish surname that he's got.
Polish? That's from Poland, right?
Well, Helmut.
One thing I like about the internet?
In the 1800s. When the Russians chased out much of the Russian Jewish population, guess where they settled? In Poland, what we knew as Czechoslovakia today, which is Czech Republic and Slovakia, which was part of the broader Austro-Hungarian Empire. In the Austro-Hungarian Empire, in Germany, when it got formed under Otto von Bismarck,
mm-hmm.
when it got unified, And some of them went to the UK. So yes.
Yeah. Now, like I said, the point you just made in reference to the Omaheke uranium exploration, with regards to policies that were sort of like left out, of the discussion during the initial handing over of all the exploration permits. And then a couple of years, down the line, the investors told, there's actually a piece of legislation we were supposed to tell you about, which we did not tell you, but now because of that, despite spending all the billions of dollars that you have spent on this exploration already, we are going to have to take that permit back, and therefore you cannot go on with your exploration.
Mm.
It doesn't make sense. That throws a giant fork into the whole, policy assurance for the investor discussion.
Yeah. And even on the legislation side of things, and even on the banking, obviously, dear listeners, so what we've currently got here in front of us are four of the investment guides that the NIPDB unveiled back in last month. So it's the one about Namibia's country profile, and it's the second one is associated to its particular sort of like, opportunities that exist. So you can view it like that. Then there is the one which comes from a legal perspective about, how do you open up a business or register a business? Not open. How do you register, do the administrative parts of registering and establishing the business in Namibia?
And then the fourth one is about the banking. Those are the four guides. So what was announced at that unveiling was that three more guides have to come. They've got to be seven in total. Now, the one that Helmut is highlighting is also based, it literally overlaps into the three investment guides that we've got, of the four that we've got here with each, in front of us, minus the country profile investment guide. The three it falls under, banking, and being able to establish a business in Namibia, and the third one of the investment opportunities that exist, is a scenario where you can literally see what we mentioned with that natural, the Standing Committee of Natural Resources assessment, that how, first and foremost, and I'll use this very good word, how malicious activity, a malicious economic activity by a ministry and by a lobby group can literally derail a targeted policy and a targeted developmental strategy of Namibia in order to achieve some of Namibia's particular goals of, firstly, industrialization, secondly, of energy independence, and thirdly, of research, development, and all other associated science-based developments from there. Now, the nice thing is, Namibia and Russia grew even closer, bigger buddies, 2 weeks back. Mm-hmm. So, literally, it means that everything is speeding up in that regard. And, yes, this oversight committee highlighted how dangerous a game even a ministry can play with a foreign investor that wishes to invest in Namibia.
Yeah, it sets terrible precedents.
It sets an ugly precedence, guys. An ugly one. And an ugly one specifically where it's with an SOE of another country that Namibia has friendly relations with. An SOE, a ministry of Namibia, is doing this to an SOE, Helmut. Guess how much, how many companies that SOE owns? I'll mention it again. You remember I mentioned it to you again.
Globally?
No. Yeah, well, globally, yes, because I also have global reach. Guess how many companies that SOE owns? That Russian SOE, Rosatom.
Five.
400.
Holy cow.
It owns 400 companies.
So I was off by 350. Actually, 395.
You said five. Yes.
I was off by 395.
Yes. I don't want to imagine the employee numbers. I don't want to. I'm not even gonna attempt. I've read it a few times, that fact, but I'm not even gonna attempt.
So there's a Namibian registered arm of the company.
Yeah, here in Namibia.
No, look.
It was that company that's the Namibian registered arm.
The thing is, the reason why that sets a terrible precedent is because it derails the whole assurance that that NIPDB is providing investors with especially foreign investors that you have this. You know what? Let me just read that for you. It's on the second investment guide, second investment guide, page 9.
Mm.
You have a consultative approach to policy changes. Namibian government upholds a long-standing tradition of policy consultation and information sharing, ensuring that reforms and new regulations are shaped through inclusive dialogue. I don't think those guys were consulted with regards to the resurrection, or should we call it, with the Lazarusing of the dead, of the dead act that came out after they have already spent $1 billion in the exploration using the permits that they were given.
Yeah.
Now, then it goes on to say that the National Planning Commission, NPC, leads the consultation of development strategies and facilitates engagement between government, civil society, and the private sector. Now, these structured consultations allow stakeholders to review draft frameworks, share prospects, prospective, and align policy objectives with national development priorities. Now, I have one of my friends works for the lottery board.
Mm.
There's something.
And you said nothing, Ahmed.
Mm.
You said nothing, Ahmed.
Did I say that out loud?
Yes.
Anyway, what happened?
Now, what happened, now say, what the, like, they're busy actually doing exactly that. They think there's some kind of, you know, legislative changes they want to make with the, you know, within the legislations that regulate the activity. And they are on a, you know, they are on a massive, you know, consultations, which means consultations had been going on for a while, which is a good thing. Now, and I think for a lot of us, we know that locally, but even if, you know, there's the internet nowadays and you can easily access that, this information as, you know, at the push of a button, you can't just assume that a foreign investor is already going to know it. So it's always a brilliant idea to provide that. And that's exactly what NIPDB is doing. Now, if NIPDB is doing this and providing all those assurances to foreign investors that if you invest in Namibia, this and this and this are the assurance that you know, that will be provided. And in her, you know, a budget speech, the Minister of Finance also referenced the, you know, the significance of, you know, of having straightforward policies that are not ambiguous when it comes to, you know, creating this business atmosphere that is investment friendly, which is why she listed, you know, a bunch of legislations that are undergoing reform for exactly that. Now, when you look at it from that, when you put that aside and you look what, you look at what Rosatom have been dragged through from 2021, it's actually going counter this assurance that NIPDB is providing for investors.
Yeah. It's also a scenario, Hamid, when you look at locally. Because even locally, the discussion is obviously that Namibians are not always perceived as being an investor. But any Namibian can be an investor. For example, that example of the Airbnb, a guy that I mentioned at the start of our conversation. Now, what this sometimes points to, Hamid, is sometimes like the personal experiences that I know of. And besides obviously the detailed experiences that we've highlighted here on the Home Run and on Eagle FM, one specific scenario that pops up is that things are also not clear for local investors in this country. So now they see what the government can do through one of its ministries to a company that owns 400 other companies in this world. They can do this. Now you wonder, is this the level of things that we allow? And then there's obviously the other yes, how much people think that when they go, is this how you treat? Is this how you treat multinationals?
That's the picture I would get.
That's
Even if I was, take for example, you know, I wasn't as multinational as Rosatom was. The question I'd be asking myself was, if they're able to do that to a guy that big, what chance do I stand?
I mean, remember when we even did the court case between PDM and the Russian billionaires business for the three farms that he bought?
Yeah.
No, the 2.5 farms that he bought. Where out of everything we concluded, even though you and I, we were doing our WhatsApp induced legal training and analysis, based on the court documents that we had, was that the legal challenge was based on the donation function. Because remember, the company, the property company of the Russian billionaire bought the 2.5 farms and then donated it back to the Minister of Agriculture by telling them, we want a 99-year lease, first dibs, in order to do various economic activities and thus create employment. Now, which ministry official doesn't like such a proposal? You bought the thing, you're giving it back to the to the government,
so
and then you are asking just to do some personal projects first on this land. Which minister doesn't love such an investor?
So hang on a second. It's like me, sort of like buying your house and then
donating it to City of Windhoek.
Yeah, and then.
You donate it, you give it away.
Yeah, you just donate to them and then tell them, you know what, I want to rent, I'll still be paying you rent.
Yeah.
I just want to stay here.
I just want to stay here and I want to.
I know I bought it and donated it to you guys, but I would, wait, what?
Exactly, Helmut. Exactly. All these things only happen in Namibia, bro. Don't you understand?
I want to be a billionaire.
No.
There's no way on God's green earth am I buying something and then handing it, you know, donating it and then telling, you know what, I still want to use it. I'll still pay you a rental for using it because I mean, I've given you the ownership after I donated it, you know, of course. Yeah.
So you bought it, it got transferred to you, You know, title deed and everything.
Yeah.
And you give those transfer deeds, you donate those transfer deeds just like that to the government back. And you tell them, I'm here to do some corporate social responsibility.
You know,
by creating jobs and agricultural projects in on these 2.5 farms.
You know, one thing I would be honest with you with.
Yeah.
Leon, if I was a commercial farmer who questionably acquired his farm in the middle of a colonial era, I don't think I would like someone coming, you know, coming to, you know, next to me and start acquiring land like that.
Why not?
Well, it raises a lot of questions. Like this is not how we do things here. You know, you're supposed to, willing buyer, willing seller, you know, things like that. But the thing is, those 2.5 farms were privately owned. Yeah. And they were
by two brothers.
Yeah, they were bought.
Yeah.
And then after being bought from the brothers, the farms were donated to the ministry, basically to the country. And then they said, okay, you know what? We know that we have given you full ownership via donation, basically, this portion of land, but we still would like to use it. We'll pay for using it.
Mm. We will even pay salaries.
You know, if that was online, I'll be like, okay, what are you up to?
If it was on an Instagram, yeah, this is a scam.
It would definitely sound, like it.
But this was an actual proposal.
And someone went to court to complain about that.
Yes, how much? You and I, we did the discussion here, live on air.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, now I understand why weed is illegal in this country. Because if we are sober and we are thinking like that.
Guys, I didn't say that. That's bull, but you know what? It's actually a good statement to highlight.
Now, consultative policy is one of those strengths that's being put forward by NIPDB, that we have these policies that we are on top of our game when it comes to ensuring that you have the right policies that will not give you sleepless nights after putting your money in the Namibian economic system. I'm just glad that the Natural Resources Standing Committee actually handled that because that sort of like cushions the blow. Because if it was just to remain like that, that won't be good.
Or if we didn't have all the information. Because Helmut, us the media, we're also quickly influenced. I have to be honest. And this is obviously an introspection that I sometimes like doing this. When, you know, I look at our industry of media.
Yeah.
And, you know, because the information dissemination factor is a key thing, because you have people in those areas, let's say that Okahania, no, that Gobabis stump reed area, they're on the southeast or eastern border area of Namibia with Botswana. Sometimes people don't get actual reading material that informs them, you know, newspapers and the likes, because the newspapers, obviously, they've been struggling with the digital trends and developments.
Yeah.
But when it comes to things like broadcast technology and broadcasting news outlets, things are also scant, meaning it's few and far that they actually get quality information reaching them. Now, here's one of the big concerns. Media can obviously be bought. You know, you can put ads there and you can do various other activities that see payment for positive representation wherever you and your company are present. And that obviously tells an audience member who, let's say, who's got a negative association to the news item or the activity or the company that's paying for this advertised spot on radio or on TV.
Yeah.
An audience member might have a negative reaction because they were like going like, ah, you know what? That's the company that did XYZ. For example, like with the lithium mining activity there in Uis. That company did this company, and they've got this negative perception. But what I loved from the Uis illegal lithium mining discussion, and even from this, the uranium exploration in the east of the country, is that the representatives of the electorate had the opportunity to go investigate.
Like, you know what, let's hear both sides.
Let's go talk to people. Let's go gather information. Let's go establish hypotheses. They actually established a hypothesis. Because this one from Hobabas is an awesome one. You know, is it true that poisoning happens? And the best conclusion that rejects that hypothesis of said pollution is you can't drive uranium from one point to come and dump it here because there's already uranium here. And there's already contamination happening here with this uranium.
The committee just went like, let's all be adults here.
So
you guys are just angry the money's moving, aren't you?
The money's literally moving across the fence, you know, into the communal area.
And people say politics is boring. No, it's not.
Definitely not. So clearly, when an investor hears about such particular discussions, yeah. You know, things are straightforward. I remember one of the other sort of like print mediums or newspapers in the country, they went for a headline because I went for the headline specifically of that article, of that report of, you know, but it was based more on the ministry playing a major part because it was the ministry. But the other media house went with a discussion of one of the oversight committee members, that being the member of parliament, Toby Obindi, saying, yeah, so when the money ended, you guys started.
I thought I was the comedian.
I mean, I was laughing. And remember, you and I, we went through a whole report.
Yeah.
So how would you pin it on one committee member, literally, to say it's their words through and through? There was a whole bunch of committee members on those on those excursion visits for them to see what's actually happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, Namibians are now starting to see, obviously it depends on whether they can access the information that we, the media, bring them. Namibians are starting to see also, okay, so if we've got malicious activity or, not maligned, I don't want to say maligned, but maligned also has an element of negativity in it.
Yeah.
But malicious activity where you can see how economic development is being, you know, literally being, hampered and hindered, but on severe levels. I mean, Helmut, it's ridiculous. How do you forego an investment of $1 billion? Yes, that is $100 million. But $100 million is not easy to write off. Which is the same thing that, who was the economist that said, back in last year when we did the other discussion when Shell, wrote off the $400 million US, was it 400 or 200 million that they wrote off?
No, I think it was 400 and something, but I don't
know.
I think it was 400
and
something.
And then the economist asked the crowd, do you think Namibia has 8 billion lying around? Do you think the Namibian government has 8 billion just lying there? Just like that, to write off.
Actually, we could use more than 8 billion. So that means we don't have 8 billion lying around.
I mean, even, what's his name? Namcor. Namcor even doesn't even have the capability to buy into the exploration activity for the oil and gas, the offshore oil and gas exploration. Namcor doesn't even have the capability to do so, Helmut. What makes a ministry official think playing jokes with someone who spent $1 billion in your country is the ideal way of handling an investor?
Yeah, but that was that way of handling it was somewhat very reckless because, for one, look, I think the fair way to ensure investor confidence. Yeah. I'm no economic expert, but I think the way of approaching it, even if there was something negative that was later discovered after giving them the investment, you know, the exploration permits, you have to, you're going to have to figure out somehow, to give them back the money that they invested.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like finding, you know, it's like, someone buying a product and finding out it's faulty.
Mm.
Yeah. You obviously have this, either a return for exchange or refund.
Yeah.
So you can't just say, okay, my apologies, you have spent $1 billion in this exploration. And it's not your fault. It's not your fault, that you have made all this exploration for this amount of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's my fault that I didn't give you full investment, exploration information. Therefore, please goodbye.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, this is Homerun with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, as always here to keep you company until the hour of 6. As usual now. So investment, NIPDB's investment guide, to provide a guidance, more like a compass on the do's and don'ts if you are looking to investing in Namibia. And it's actually, there's a reason behind, you know, there's a reason behind this information being provided publicly. I'm sure there are a lot of reasons, but one that I can think of on top of, you know, and actually, you can find in these documents is, and also on the NIPDB website, is that Namibia is a foreign investment hotspot. Yeah. Now, so obviously, if you have a lot of investors that are eyeing your country, you'll want to provide, you know, guidance on how they can do it without finding themselves in legal hot waters. Except the policies, we're still working on that. So guide number 3 offers on page 9. Investor consideration of the, and they provide information on investor consideration, information on Foreign Investment Act, and investment policy, Namibia's investment promotion and facilitation bill.
I'm so happy you mentioned it like that, Albert. There's a whole bunch of bills that just lie out there.
Yeah. Now, in the fourth, investment guide, just the last, way at the end, not the last page, just way at the end, they do provide like all the necessary legislations, like the Act of Parliament that regulates the investment atmosphere, you should get yourself acquainted with, before you, you storm into the, into Namibia with a whole lot of your money to start investing. Basically, things legal wise, you have to familiarize yourself with. Of course, if you are, if you have billions of dollars, you are not doing all these things yourself. You have, accountants and lawyers that are basically going through the business experts that are going through all these things. And page 37 of, a guide number 4 would come in very handy, because that's where they provide a list of legislations that, if you are looking to investing in Namibia now, which also goes to local investors, basically, you may want to familiarize yourself with that. So you have the Legal Practitioners Act, you have the Estate Agents Act, Public Accountants and Auditors, Casinos and Gambling, Housing Act.
That's a whole piece of legislation. Oh no, let me also help you there, Hamid, because Casino Gambling, Real Estate Agents Acts, the two of them have amendments before the parliament. But
And this is where I continuously complain. Now I'm going to use the word complain, guys. Remember, Helmut, I said last week, it's the caliber of MPs we've got in Parliament who have to debate about real economic things, like things that impact business, investment climate, investment factors, for example, like laws, business laws and banking laws.
Yeah.
But we want to go argue about farmland. We want to go argue about, for example, why is Ministry of Defense not declaring, or Minister of Defense or August 26 not declaring financials? We want to debate those things. Why are we concerned with things that we can't actually change, because there's always going to be a ruling party with a majority in the parliament or in the National Assembly? And then we can actually try and deal with things that have amendments lying in front of them. And this is one of the interesting things that always pop up. When the now defunct Ministry Industries, Industrialization and Trade was split in two, and one half was sent off, the trade part was sent off to international relations, and the other part was sent off. You know what? I actually think it was international relations that should have been absorbed into industrialization and trade.
Not the other way around.
Not the other way around. I know it's too late now. We're two years after the fact, guys. But every time, I'm now sitting and thinking every time, we should have rather just done the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Because now Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy doesn't know what to do with its industries part.
They're so focused on mining. I think the Ministry of Mines should just be...
Ministry of Mines and Energy. Straightforward.
Yeah.
But now you've got industries in there. Okay, industries can even include the retail sector. So the big conversation point here, Helmut, is how whatever industries in the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy wishes to achieve, they have to go and find out about the third of the number three of the investment guides. Now, this is on page 16 of the investment guide for starting a business in Namibia. Page 16 falls under chapter, the income tax or the taxation chapter, tax registration, sorry, tax registration chapter. So 3.3 on page 16 of this guide states double taxation or treaty relief that can get the sentence. I would get the sentence. Double taxation agreements, also known as DTAs, may override Namibian withholding taxes or tax law, as well as a taxation of deemed source of income. Namibia has double tax treaties with Botswana, France, Germany, India, Malaysia, Mauritius, Romania, the Russian Federation, South Africa, Sweden, and the United Kingdom. You know who's missing there? Probably the United States. But lo and behold, until that oil flows, they will also be there.
How is there going? Romania?
Who are we dealing with in Romania, Helmut? Can we even fly to Romania? Can you get a flight to Romania, Helmut? From Osea Gutago?
No, I would love to.
Why, Helmut?
Hmm?
Why? What's in Romania? You know, I might disappear there because, you know, it's Eastern Europe. You know, they do a lot of human trafficking.
When it comes to Eastern Europe, I'm more interested in, they have a lot of rich history.
What, are you talking about Ceausescu?
The socialist leader they had for
100 years. Or are you talking about Vlad the Impaler, who was trying to fight off the Ottomans?
That guy knew how to send a message home.
And that included even messages to relatives. But actually, most of his revenge was based upon what they did to his father and his relatives, the broader family of that family that Vlad the Impaler came from. And no, he did not drink blood, guys. And he wasn't the first Dracula. No. His name was Vlad the Impaler. That's it. That's his nickname. Like Ivan the Terrible. He didn't like that name, and he decided to, you know what? Let's massacre a bunch more of peasants.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it cements the terrible part of things.
Including my son.
Medieval history is an ugly thing, yo.
I know, right?
It's an ugly thing. So When it looks to this, the advice, not, yeah, the advice given under this 3.3 of the double taxation or treaty relief, aspect, Hamud, it cites, in respect of dividends, the treaty relief usually contains details on the shareholding percentage to determine the relief available. It is nevertheless important to consider the details of the specific treaty before any relief is applied. So this technically means, even for you, the Namibian business or the government official that works, or the NAMRA official working in NAMRA, before you actually just, you know, take on face value that potentially the investor comes from any of the above mentioned that I mentioned,
yeah.
And they show up and they say, no, Namibia and my home country have a double taxation or treaty relief agreement, scrutinize the percentage ownerships. That's the basic advice that's given here by the volume 3. And it obviously highlights core knowledge. This is the kind of knowledge, Helmut, I wanted. This is, you know, that's why I sometimes love lawyers, ne? You have to be proud of your
profession.
You're not practicing it, Helmut, because you know, you're like me, you know. I was supposed to be in business, but you know, I'm here finding myself in media, and you were supposed to be in law, but you find yourself in stand-up comedy.
Look, one thing I like about the media is, I don't have, when someone just wake up, when someone called John Walenga just wake up and starts a radio station. I think the biggest problem with practicing.
Yeah.
I have come to find out is, there's a lot of red tapes.
There's a lot of red tapes,
and it's kind of sort of like difficult to point out basically what's just staring at you in the face.
Yeah.
And, a lot of things are then buried in technicalities. You have to do this and this and this and this and this way. That doesn't leave a lot of room to improvise, which I think is the problem with modern legal drafting, basically the entire field of law and the entire field of science. There's a reason why most of the scientific breakthrough happens by accident.
Mm.
When you allow people to explore, it gives them room to come up with new discoveries.
Yeah.
A lot of discoveries have come out of people investigating or researching something different.
Or they began in an unexplored, underdeveloped field, for example, social media, which popped up. Who thought about social media taking the next step to human connectivity? If you're sitting on the other side of the planet, you can connect with someone this side of the planet, which has given rise to this thing, the smartphone.
Yeah.
Becoming possible as a new technology.
Yeah. Now, I think that's also, that's slowly seeping into the media space. If you look at, especially mainstream media.
Mm.
So there's a lot of, you have to, they pay a lot of attention to words like, unless it's being admitted by some official somewhere, don't call it a genocide. Unless it's being admitted by some official somewhere, don't call it an invasion.
Mm.
So everyone then can come up with with some jargon to describe what's very obvious.
Wow, Hamoud.
No, it's not a preemptive strike. It's a war. It's simple.
It's true. It's also a scenario of, for example.
Russia is calling it special military operation. But Israel is calling it a preemptive strike. Iran is saying, look, guys, we're at war. And you have the entire White House going, no, it's not a war yet.
It's an excursion.
Exactly. it's
a walk in the park.
It's a technical jargon where that everything is buried in.
A school visit somewhere.
Now, I don't have to worry about that. That's one of the reasons why, I like my job here.
Yeah.
I don't have to pay attention to all the legal jargon and basically stick to it. You know what? Until some guy somewhere uses this word, some guy in the, in the White House uses it, you can't use it. It's very simple. Bombs are exploding, it's a war.
And why do you need that kind of approval level? I mean, Helmut,
That's why dictionaries exist. Yeah. You know, it's not for one political leader to try and influence the explanation in a dictionary regarding the word kiss. What does the word kiss stand for? Is it an immoral act or is it a moral act? Is it an act of endearment sometimes? What does the action and the word kiss mean?
Exactly. That's the garbage. I mean, that's the... That's why we find ourselves in a space where we are spending hours debating, what is a woman, really?
Exactly. And I mean, yes, the narratives out there are just, like you said, garbage. But it's also a picture, Hamid, of realizing that there's obviously a lot of propaganda going on.
A lot of it.
A lot, yeah. A lot. And the propaganda is using AI. And a lot of the propaganda is also driven by intelligence services, military, the military communication strategies, because they realized since the Second World War, or was it the First World War? When did the propaganda?
Must be after Second World War. Is it?
It began in the first. It began in the second.
Yeah, because I believe Operation Mockingbird coming out of the U.S. Secret Service, where they actually had to work with media houses and media professionals to push certain narratives on certain subjects.
Until I discovered last year, the CIA supplies to is the New York Times and all the major outlets, and the Mossad supplies to some of the Israeli outlets. The MI6 supplies to British outlets. The German intelligence supplies to German outlets.
You know what? That's why the late Robert Fisk kept complaining that what happened to the media? Because every article I pick, it's not saying who said what, which would speak a lot into transparency, unless you are protecting your source, who is in harm's way. But if he is, a public figure, you can't just run around saying,
according to confidential sources.
Yeah, US officials say this. US officials say, now, this official said, what
who
official?
Is because the official?
I want to ask follow-up questions. Yeah. So now I have to ask you so you can go and ask them. At this point, you can just fabricate something.
Exactly. And then just sit in there with their supposed quotations. Who is the source and what is the source? Now, obviously, many, many journalists will come and say, I've got the right to protect my sources. Even if you take the person to a court, into a court case, to reveal who the sources are. The discussion is one. I've even read what's the famous article by the guy, was it? Yeah, it was Fisk. Has he passed away? But there was a guy that wrote literally about the Nord Stream bombing that happened. You know who I'm talking about. He was also a former high-profile journalist in the U.S. And he wrote this article, Helmut, and every time this is a long read I'm talking about. I was like into – it looked like a good more than 1,000-word thing. It looked literally like a feature article. And I was like, but who are these sources? And it describes the training that the supposed Navy SEALs team did in Florida. How did he know there's a facility, a Navy SEALs training facility in Florida? It's a military installation. How did he know of when the supposed planting of explosives? Because remember, the theory that existed was the explosions were delayed. They didn't happen exactly when NATO was having a naval exercise literally in the Baltic Sea.
Some kind of, is it remote detonation?
Remote detonation, and it was a delayed remote detonation, meaning after that activity took place, a week later, the explosion happened. After that whole naval activity took place, a week later, that explosion happened. Now, the Russian accusation was, it's the Americans, because there was an American participation in that naval exercise. Secondly was, the Norwegians were involved. But the Norwegians were used as sort of like the mediating third party to establish whether or not there was any foul play. Guess where the foul play ends up? On a rogue, supposed angry Ukrainian dissident who felt like they wanted to take a retaliation effort into their own hands against
Russia's invasion into Eastern Europe, Eastern Ukraine.
Look, sometimes if you're going to lie, make sure it's you know, it's believable. Now,
if everyone saw that you were there the previous week, Hamoud.
First of all, to pull that off, you'll have to be a diver.
Yes, and a deep sea diver.
Deep sea diver.
Yeah.
And now you also have to put your hands on explosives. Now, even if that was true, it really does put you know, a lot of fear into your people that if any rogue guy can put their hands on explosives, then how safe are we?
Mm.
Yeah. So now coming back to this investment assurances, I think, you know, it's a good thing that the Omaheke uranium exploration discussion, the report coming out of the National Assembly Standing Committee, Natural Resources Standing Committee from National Assembly. It's a good thing that came out before this report. Because...
Actually, no.
Wait, came out the other way around.
Yeah, the investment guides happened, but the investment guides were launched prior to this report's release. But the whole discussion of the standing committee's visit took place was in 2025. The report only came out after the investment guides came out. So it's actually a good thing we did the report first before we did the guides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, because, but most importantly for me is how the standing committee basically handled the whole thing and from the investigation to the conclusion that they reached.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure they knew just how damning this can be.
True.
Yeah.
But remember, there's now one final sort of like, there's now one final verdict to be expected. The verdict is coming from the IAEA's technical team that was here in Jan.
No, in Jan. No, see, look, the damning part I'm talking about is any investor will come and ask you that I read about this and this and this entity that was investigating, that was exploring for, you know, for these resources in the Mahike region. And this is, they started in 2011, 2012, around 2013 there. And you only revoked their permit and gave them the reason why their permit was taken and only find out that it was an old age legislation that was supposed to be introduced to them before giving them, while you guys were considering giving them the permit.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that you didn't do that, why should I trust you? How can you assure me that the same thing that happened to them is not going to happen to me? Because, they are a multinational conglomerate. I don't have the level of money they have. I don't have the luxury of losing $1 billion.
Mm.
Yeah. I can't write that off.
Mm.
You'll have to jump through hoops to basically convince that investor that it's safe.
Mm.
Yeah. It's like having an establishment, take for example, that offers hospitality services, and then some kind of, flu breaks out.
Mm.
It will take a very long time for you to convince people that, okay, now it's safe. Yeah.
And it's a good point you're highlighting there, Hamoud, because the point rests on the indication of precedence. How prevalent will this take place? Do you know what's the funny thing?
How prevalent will it?
It's not even an old age or an age old act even that was made alive. But it's because the Ministry of Water and the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, the previous version of it, because the current version has fisheries in it, they had given the first round of exploration licenses to this entity. So now suddenly when exploration has to jump across the fence into communal land, the licenses are revoked. The permit is revoked.
And you are the government that's telling me, and I'm, with all other investors that we have ironclad policies that you can rely on.
Exactly. Mm. So, and now that's what makes things even worse. The precedence that you're asking about is they said yes, and that law is the Water Management Act of 2013 or 2012. 2013 or it's not even that old, Helmut. 2013 or 2012.
So basically started around the same time the exploration started.
Exactly. So when you look, but it was made dormant for whatever reason. We don't know the reason.
Mm-hmm.
But to now revive something in 2021 and say, no, this thing is now coming into action and no, you can't have permits anymore. Why? obviously we know why we went through that report. Mm-hmm. There is another particularly interesting thing that also comes out about this, Hamoud, is the clarity on the previous statement I made about the quality of MPs we've got in Parliament or National Assembly today. I will say this today and more, because if people are going to waste their time, and I say this, yes, I waste their time debating on why a ministry has to get X amount of money with the motivations that was done on 26 February. I mean, it's water under the bridge. Look where we are now, 31 March, Hamoud. And I got yesterday's, sort of like you get, we the media on the one WhatsApp group, we get like the, you know, what is the agenda paper for the National Assembly debates and what is to be debated. You get to see what they will look at. Hamoud, we have no indication where this, we have no indication of where the cybersecurity bill is.
I understand why it's taking forever.
Data protection bill is. Now I hear, do you know what I hear? Last week I went to a BIPA organized, national intellectual policy, intellectual property policy, development engagement last week, where I had to hear that there's a couple of bills on the table. And I don't know where they are. I've never seen them being presented to the parliament. I've never seen them, Helmut. There's so many bills there,
mm-hmm,
that are still in bill format or proposed laws.
Point of correction, have been.
Are still. Not have been. They are still there. Because there was a consultant hired to look at the legal framework landscape and the recommendations. The consultant highlights, there's an act here, there's an act there, and that act is somewhat conflicting with this new bill that you want to bring in here. Remember the Kampala Protocol that you and I did in 2024?
Yeah.
The Kampala Protocol about copyright protection, which the now defunct Ministry of Industrialization and Trade presented through their minister at the time, that being Minister Lucia Ipumbu, at the time in the National Assembly. And what Ipumbu was presenting technically was, we need to have a standalone copyright protection legislation. Even though we've got the Intellectual Property Protection Act, but that has also been amended, mm-hmm, or was one of the proposals she made for amendment. Guess what is also still in the time frame, in the pipeline? The Investment Promotion Bill. It's a bill, Helmut. It's a bill, Helmut.
But don't you worry.
But we bring out guides.
Your money is safe here.
We bring out guides. When? Okay, before that, Helmut, before we end off, let's quickly take a live read.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Davichi University for the 2026 January applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education for the following programs. Certificate in Project Management Level 5, Certificate in Supply Chain Management Level 5, Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6, Diploma in Supply Chain Management Level 6, Diploma in Project Management Level 6, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours and the Bachelor of Project Management Honours. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Davichi University, where everyone is an achiever.
Okay, look, one thing I beginning to actually find interesting about our country, especially when it comes to investment, both especially foreign investment, is how we are topping the list in greenfield foreign direct investment with all these bills.
Helmut, please help me. I've now given up hope when I hear when there's a consultant coming to review the legal framework landscape in Namibia, and they discover there's a whole bunch of bills hanging somewhere. It's not even at National Assembly level. It's just hanging somewhere in the ministry.
Now, you know, one of those biggest problems was when it comes to, as a local investor, I think they are most likely going to run into is the elephant in the room when it comes to which industries are prioritized, not just in Namibia, but in the African continent.
Yeah.
The extractive industry. And that's an investment heavy financially and technically and infrastructure wise. That's not going to be easy for the local guys.
but it runs concurrent. True.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Mopasa jika shoprite out of pay and the repevi of Chapurinawa. To Chapura, Echapurinine, name me Fenine, Pamina Horikeo, Tashiningwa, Nokupisa Oshimarua, Tini Mangashi, Omai, Roista, Yeromirong of Barinagane, what Mr. Sweet Marshmallow Eggs, Venedora, Omirongway no way, Nesenda, Omirongway no way, Mokapate, Okashako Pusirawe Pungu, Champion Super Maze Mill, Kiro di Ramrongo, Oke de Serenane, Nesenda, Omirongway no way, Enda Dodika, Odinongusuwa Masuka Manoga Tiri, Ovura Oetunji, Oko Shoprite, Akuke.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And so we're still on the discussion of investor, you know, of investment, which I, from my point of view, is there's the industries like the, you know, the so beloved extractive industry. That's going to be somewhat tricky for the local guys because of the infrastructure, finance, and the skills heavy requirement of the, you know, of the industry investment wise.
Yeah. No, it is going to be like that. Helmut, because
yeah, but the foreign guys will just come in with foreign currency and
obviously, you know, how should I put this? You know, Donald Trump is making things very lovely for other people to come to Namibia. I'm saying yes for the tourism component because I'm hearing there's a lot of business happening. Like, you don't see it obviously,
yeah.
But let's, for example, say how much you want to build your own PC. You know, it just, you suddenly hear that somehow those RAM prices and CPU prices and graphics card prices has found its way here into a market as small as Namibia. Because there's a guy I know who's a sales consultant in that particular technology sphere of things. And he said, Dwight, you would not believe how people are buying hardware and hardware components at the prices that they have to sell. Because remember, it's a supply channel. It's a whole channel of getting to the consumer at the end. And people are buying these prices. They're just buying it up. So when we obviously look at these things, the discussion points towards what role, at what level can business development take place in Namibia, at what level, what role can investment take place, at what level, what role, and how extensively can the investment approach achieve Namibia's particular, you know, developmental goals, and where you're going to position this, what sector, what industry, you name it. The downside is we mentioned the precedents. We mentioned oddities that we didn't even know we had double taxation or treaty relief agreements
with any country.
With Romania.
Yeah, turns out, you know, just
how much you can't even fly directly to Sweden. How did we get one with Sweden also? You can't fly directly from
look, but that shows how good we are at business.
We love that partnering up. No, let's be trade partners. And then we don't trade in any capacity
yeah.
with the entity. So, I mean,
Namibia loves to follow through on its policy of being a friend to everybody, even including Kim Jong-un, and an enemy to nobody. So, yeah, let's see how far this takes us.
Look, if we're friends with Donald Trump, I don't think there's a limit somewhere there. A lot of things are going to change now. If, obviously we are going to change depending on how things go in the Middle East, because if there are boots on the ground and things escalate even further, then, the suspicion is that, or more like, the suspicion or the prediction is that, the Strait of Hormuz won't be the only one closed. Chances are very high, the Yemenis, Yemen have basically, will obviously side with Iran.
Mm.
And the Yemen also can start bombing pretty much every ship that goes through the Strait of,
it's not just Strait of Hormuz, it's here in the, Red Sea.
Yeah, it's the Bab al-Mandeb Strait.
That one.
Yeah. That's the strait basically that joins the Red Sea with the Gulf of Aden.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, also.
Leading up to the Suez Canal.
Yeah. I also just found out that, Bab al-Mandeb Strait, the name is Arabic for Gate of Tears. Oh, we're gonna cry if that one is yes.
Being poetic. Look at these guys. I mean, we didn't ask for the translation, but you know what? Helmut looked that up, guys.
No, we're going to cry. But, on my way here.
Yeah.
From one service station to another, there were a lot of long queues at service stations. So obviously people are, fueling up because the prices are going to skyrocket from,
No, it already began this morning at 1 a.m.
Exactly. That's just half of it. Now, I have to factor in the infrastructure damage.
Mm.
And now you are looking at, if this Gate of Tears Strait is thrown into that mix.
Gate of Tears.
Who came up with that? Now.
We will make you cry.
Yeah.
I think it's the Somalis.
Yeah, it's Arabic. Yeah. And I came to the realization of just how important that strait is.
Mm.
That's when I totally understand why Djibouti is flooded with foreign military bases.
Of course.
That's one global economic choke point.
No, it is. It is. And it's flowing this way now, south, because of the Yemenis and because of Hormuz. And once again, for some reason, people are talking about the positives that can be derived from this. But the positives that do not actually mean that the petrol price here in Windhoek or in Gobabis or in Keetmanshoop is going to be cheaper. It does not translate to that.
No, it doesn't.
It really doesn't. Because
no, look, as soon as it doesn't translate into that for an average income earner, that's not positive. That's negative.
No, exactly. Because you can only see 2 months from now or 3 months from now how your bread price is going to increase, your milk is going to increase, your cooking oil is going to increase, your sugar, you name it, whatever is in your basket.
Everything.
Yeah, definitely your fuel is going to increase, so your... Once again, the taxi drivers would once again somehow go and vent at one stage.
Basically, anything that needs transporting.
Exactly. So, I know it's not to beat down on the economists in this particular statement I'm making, but we have to be. It doesn't take an economics degree, Hamoud, if you can point to the potential changes that could happen, and the changes can happen in things that actually do impact way of life. The affordability component in the everyday Namibian life, which is what you use as electricity or energy at home, supply for clean drinkable water, do you have a car, do you have any particular other consumable goods that you consume on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis? And if you can point to all those things, there are going to be price spikes in the foreseeable future, definitely. And it doesn't matter. Yes, even with the ministry coming out on Friday saying there is
enough supply of petrol. Let's face it. Under the current climate of what Donald Trump is doing in there to Iran, the current climate is not conducive. The current climate is really not conducive because as an investor, whether you're local or international, you came on you came in with a specific budget.
Yeah.
Now you've got to deal with an inflated budget potentially because of the inflationary pressures.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Don't worry, guys, we didn't ghost you.
No, we didn't.
Quickly just had a short off-air meeting. But yeah, so... Yes, Helmut. Currently, cost of living will be impacted, even in the month of April, even though Namibians are looking forward to their long weekend. People might be saying, yeah, it's long lines. I also saw a long line here. The three service stations close to our studio. But it wasn't because of that. The one facing, eastwards towards Khobabis was because there's a whole bunch of
people that are that drive daily between Windhoek and Gobabis.
Celebrate
so,
Namibia's independence if people are at Exodus Investment CC. Get solar lights for just 100 Namibian dollars. We also stock CCTV Wi-Fi cameras, TV mounts, DSTV and GoTV satellite TV accessories, plus replacement remotes for TVs, air conditioners and many other electronic accessories only at Exodus Investment CC. Visit us today at Shop 7, Black Chain Shopping Center in Katutura, next to Bank Windhoek. We are open daily, including public holidays, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. for your convenience. Call or WhatsApp 081-3191-395 and find us on social media. Exodus Investment CC, your trusted store for quality electronics and accessories. Hurry! Our independence special runs until the 30th of April 2026. And remember, Exodus Investment CC. We courier countrywide. Call us now.
So, the cost of living.
Yeah.
And where are we? Which is now, I think part of the mix up when it comes to this whole, like long queues at service station, and basically a lot of people, especially, within close proximity to shopping complexes, is because it's also month end.
That's the one part, Helmut, which you are right. And it's close to close proximity of month end to a long weekend.
A long weekend and fuel price increment. I mean, there are a lot of influencing factors.
So, please, guys, if we're going to make assumptions based on what you observe out in the field, also remember that there's a long weekend, né? So that means people probably took leave, mm-hmm. and the leave is manifesting on a Tuesday, which just looks weird. Yes, it does look weird, but that's what happens. We obviously have to look at the things that are on or in the shelves.
Yeah.
Things like primarily discussions of bread. I know there's that supposed policy or legal thing that says no VAT on bread, but that's not what I see at the till. I'll tell you today, Hamoud, that's not what I see at the till.
The prices will make you go,
Somewhere, if you add in the bread between the rest of your shopping, because you don't just walk in and buy a loaf of bread. Sometimes you buy a loaf of bread and other things. And somehow there is a VAT in there. There's a VAT in there. Sorry, I accidentally, fought with my mic. There's a VAT in there somewhere, which is obviously one of the things that is even advised in that investment guide number 3, the various particular taxes that companies have to consider when they come and do business in Namibia. One of them is obviously value addition tax. But, I was given a very good philosophic position just last year. If you, Helmut, decide to open up a business and you decide to import, let's say you decide to do an order with me. You do an exact order with me.
Mm.
Why must you pay tax? Why must you pay VAT? Why must you charge VAT to your customers? What does VAT stand for?
Value added.
What value did you add?
Well, I bought.
How much? You didn't amend the state of the product. You didn't add something to it. You didn't change its features or its usability.
Wait, does the screen protector count?
No.
Okay.
Did you manufacture the screen protector?
The case?
No. The particular thing here is a foreign investor has a very strong claim to make, to technically say, I don't want to pay value-added tax because I'm just importing things. So I'm not adding value. And in actual fact, I'm adding more cost to the thing. Even a local Namibian investor can do that who's in order with me. They can literally go and ask and, petition and write to the ministers. And I don't understand also why we have this thing of the discretionary powers for a minister.
Mm-hmm.
Because the discussion should be based upon experts highlighting things based upon data and analysis. Instead of saying, okay, now that you're starting a business as a Namibian and you're on order with me, you must pay VAT, you must pay the import tax. We understand the import tax, but why must you pay VAT? Why must you charge your customers VAT? You're not adding value to the product. You're not adding any changes to the actual original state of the product. So that should be, and mind you, the government makes a lot of money, guys, from that. The government makes a lot of money from that. And much of our VAT is based upon imported things from South Africa. So there's also that particular consideration to factor in. Which also, before I forget, there's Germany as well. People import a lot of things from Germany.
Oh, no. Well, people import a lot of things from Germany.
China, France.
Japan.
Japan. So we have to ask critical questions here. I mean, if you want to see a flourishing sectors happen or occur in the Namibian economy, the discussion of that needs to start becoming a more focused conversation, being the Ministry of Finance must come and prove if a company imports something from another country, why that should not be charged on something. I understand the general sales tax thing that a country like the United States have, but that's more a slippery slope for literal price negotiations that can go very, very wrong. So yeah, just to let you know, dear listeners, we will be handing over in a couple of minutes to a live stream event coming through specifically where we, Eagle FM, will be bringing to you in a few, or like I said, a couple of minutes. It is known as the, I just want to read it again, the Naban pitch event. And this is said to be streamed late, just after our discussion here of the home run. For those of you that will be staying tuned and have been waiting for David to commence with business and economic segment, it's not going to happen because of the particular live stream that is scheduled. Now, it is set to stream from now, not now actually, because we are still on air primarily, but it's set to stream from 6 until 9. So we're just waiting if you've been following us on our social media regarding that particular live stream and you've been trying to tune in, just to let you know, we do know about it and it has, we have to get the green light from the venue specifically for crossing over in that regard.
Yeah. And, from 6 to 9, and that of course is 6 African time. As you can tell that, it's 20 minutes past the hour of 6, and it's still waiting for that green light, but gives me more time to basically cover all that I that I did not have a chance to cover in this whole investment guide. Like, I have money to invest. Some would argue I have, but I have, some of us are, in survival mode. So, obviously that's a 6 African time, but just do stay tuned. But one thing to note is that, business and economic segment won't be, on today, obviously because of the upcoming, live stream. Several things here. Obviously, investment, investment confidence, investor confidence. And for some reason, more often when we talk about investors, we talk about that mostly in reference to foreign investors.
Definitely. Definitely, Hamut. We don't consider each other as investors, meaning us fellow Namibians between each other.
I think this is primarily because, I don't want to say the ease of doing business. I would say the currency is also involved. Remember the local energy supply guys that wanted to first prioritize, just shipping their sources outside the country.
Mm.
Why did they want to do that?
I mean,
is it the foreign currency involved that brings in more bucks than selling stuff locally?
Well, most definitely, Hamut. But there's obviously also a specific thing about how the multinationals actually interact into the Namibian business landscape or into the Namibian economy. So there's also in the guidance 3 that foreign investors are allowed under the Namibian banking laws or rules to hold a
I think you mentioned it just now, but a quantity of their money they can hold in foreign currency. As long as they disclose this account.
Oh.
They can disclose this account. They have to disclose this account to the relevant authorities in Namibia.
Yeah.
When they operate, if they're a multinational operating in Namibia, to highlight there's this amount of money we've got that is some sort of amount of money in an offshore bank account. But it also, in the same breath, it mentions that you as a Namibian, you are allowed to also hold an offshore account under certain conditions.
Yeah.
Which makes it smell a lot like the Panama Papers.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah, it has a strong whiff. You know, and that whiff, Helmut, it's a whiff that, you know, it reeks of a lot of decay. No, I'm just being dramatic, guys. Don't
worry. There are a number
of question marks.
Question marks and Namibian names that came out of the Panama Papers. I don't have a lawyer or bodyguard.
So we won't divulge any of those.
Yeah. But look, the thing is, obviously, I think that's true for basically everything. Without the right regulations, it's open to abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's where every, you know, the reason why I started with the point that every time that we talk about foreign, you know, we talk about investment, and this is not just, I've come to learn not just in Namibia, but, you know, the whole continent. Every time that we talk about investment, we lean heavily towards a foreign investment.
Mm.
And that's because, well, these guys are coming in with their foreign currency and they're, you know, mostly backed by old money. So money is more often not a problem for them. Now, if you are still trying to find your footing in Namibia where the ease of doing business is very questionable, it's kind of difficult to sort of like operate in the same landscape with these guys. And Namibian legislations are basically sort of like structured structured to that fact, to all those facts, and coming, you know, realizing that a local guy is not going to compete with a Meta or a Microsoft.
Yeah.
Now, that always takes me back to, I think it's 2023 or 2024 when Michael Mesa.
Mm.
Had a conversation with the Minister of Industrialization and Trade.
Mm.
The one thing that was made out is that the Minister of Industrialization and Trade, that was Lucia Pumba at the time, explained like the amount, in amounts of money, the amount of money that is reserved for local investors.
Mm.
That if you are a foreign investor, you will have to invest from this amount of money or higher. So I transcribed that whole conversation. That's why it stuck in my head.
Mm.
Now, I think, categorization of saying, you know what, you can't come from outside Namibia and invest in this investment category because this one is reserved for local investors.
Yeah.
If you are coming from, if you're a foreign investor, you can only invest from this amount of money or higher, which is high, way above what's reserved for the average local investor.
Yeah.
Now, those categorizations are obviously important. But now, even with these regulations in place, you already have issues of, for a lot of Namibians, one of those things, especially in the extractive industry, one of the things that's been pointed out is that, is one of every, you know, when you have extractive, you know, documents and, just sell them. Easy way to make money.
I mean, it's the same thing that's been happening in the fishing sector, Amun. Get yourself a quota. Boom! Let's go to the casino, my guys!
Yep.
Who's got the biggest order?
Yeah, you can get yourself a Land Cruiser, change the license plate number to fish. You know, you just go nuts.
Just don't say fish one, please.
You said it.
Because we already had an oil one.
I always knew the oil one guys are, you know, I innocent. They didn't do it, you know, and they got bail.
Hot dogs. I love hot dogs. I wonder why it's called a hot dog. I can eat them day or night. Let's squeeze some tomato sauce on this bad boy and enjoy. Ah, no! Now I've got tomato sauce on my dog, my watch, and my favorite shirt.
Sometimes you just squeeze too hard, and your favorite shirt gets ruined. But luckily, with Express Credit's easy payday loans, you can get up to 9,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Yeah, you know, I stopped saying negative things about those guys when I found out that they got paid.
Look, everybody, you know, they have rights, Hamoud, so we have to respect that.
I mean, Article 18 must be respected by any means necessary.
Most definitely, man. I agree with that. That sounds top notch.
Imagine being the guy that took the Audi of someone that now have bail. Ah, yeah.
And you have to give the Audi back. And the person tells you,
Look, man, sometimes these jokes rise.
So that's what happens, yeah. Right. But on that note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for this evening session, because we've now passed into the evening slot of the home run. And as mentioned, the business and economic segment is not happening for tonight. We're crossing over now to a live stream that is currently coming from one of the known as the Naban, and we're crossing over after this.
Look, man, sometimes these jokes rise.
So that's what happens, yeah.